So before we begin with the Bhagavatam, I'd like to express my joy and gratitude that I have the opportunity to visit you here in your wonderful community. It's a great honor for me. And I have been once before to the manor, but this must be 30 years ago. That was when I just got married. So it seems almost like previous lifetime or something. Yeah, so, and it was always my dream and hope to visit you here and try to offer some humble service, so finally I got the chance. And since many of you probably I'm meeting the first time, I will just introduce myself a little bit. So my name is Devaki Devidasi, and I'm actually originally from Germany. Not from Russia and not from Lithuania or whatever people often think. So I grew up in Germany. But then I left Germany already in 84. I somehow had that feeling it's not my place there. And I went traveling around Europe, Africa, Australia, searching for some higher answers to life. And then in Australia, I met the devotees in 85. That's why my accent has a bit of a tinge of Aussie accent there. So, and I came to a farm outside Sydney, Kola River Farm. I didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. And immediately, 1 week, after I met the devotees, I moved from the guest room to the Brahmacharini Ashram. And I was for 4 years there in the Brahmacharini Ashram. I was disciple of Bhavananda. Then later took reinitiation of Prabhu Vishnu, former Swami now Prabhu. And then I took one more time reinitiation of His Holiness Niranjana Swami. But amazingly enough, all these three personalities were the perfect guru at that time. My whole life would have gone completely different if I had not taken shelter of these personalities. So there's no grudges or bad feelings or something. It was all perfect for me. So in any case, then, yeah, I was 4 years in the Brahmacharini Ashram. Then I entered married life. I was married for 10 years, and in that time, by Krishna's arrangement, we kind of pioneered the first more organized temple in the former Soviet Union, in Riga, Latvia. We went there in 89. That was just when the whole communist system fell apart, and my former husband, his parents were from there, but he was born in Australia. So that's why he knew the language, and he always, as a Brahmachari, he always dreamed to go there and preach. So then 2 months after we got married, we went there and started things there. And it was a very wonderful time in adventurous pioneer work. I wouldn't want to miss a single day. I learned so many things. So and then in 99, my former husband decided to take a break from Krishna consciousness, and he remarried a non-devotee, and he's still a tiny little connected with ISKCON. Actually, Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, I met him at the Baltic Festival, and he said to me, "Guess what? I am friends on Facebook with Gurutama, with your ex-husband." So, I mean, he's still out there somewhere, but he's not really practicing much at the moment. So, and anyway, that was in 99. So, and then I simply decided to move on to the renounced phase of life. I was 40 at the time, so it was maybe a little early for many, but for me, it just felt right. So, and since 1999, I'm basically living out of a suitcase, and I spent 6 months in India and Bangladesh per year, and 6 months all around Europe. I spent quite a bit of time in Ukraine. Niranjana Swami was the one who really encouraged me to preach and travel and come to Ukraine and so on. And I just came a few days from this gigantic Bhakti Sangam festival in Ukraine. If you ever get a chance to go there, please do so. it's really out of this world. I mean, really, it's such a unique thing in the whole world of ISKCON. There's about 8,000 to 10,000 devotees there, and no Hindu background. This is all local people. There's about 20 Indian body devotees there out of these 8,000, you know. So it's really all local people, you know. Yes, and there's so many marjas there, about 20 preachers and marjas, kirtaniers, 5 days, a whole seminar mela with six venues parallel with all kinds of things going on, and the most amazing service. Any foreign devotee will be part of the VIP prasadam, and oh my God, it's really such a service spirit there. It's amazing. There's 1,000 people just full-time serving to get this whole festival off the ground. 1,000 devotees. It's really the closest what you can experience to Vaikuntha atmosphere, really. So if you ever want to go, you can let me know. I'm well connected there, and I can, you know, arrange that you will taken care of nicely. And you don't have to queue up with 8,000 people in the prasadam line or something. But even that is well organized. So in any case, yes, I spent a fair bit of time in Ukraine, but also other Western European countries. And I also recently started going to North America, to the States and to Canada too. And my main two topics which I feel such an urge to preach about is, first of all, the Holy Name. So I like to conduct Holy Name retreats in all different parts of the world, because I'm convinced that we are not making enough effort to get on deeper levels of understanding, that we take this japa and kirtan very lightly and superficially, and yeah, we are not really chanting the Holy Name. And the other point I feel such strong urgency for is the topic of spiritual culture. Because, yeah, for the last 20 years I've been involved in Bangladesh. Now I'm only spending 3-4 weeks per year, but I used to be there 3-4 months per year. And there's no Western devotees living there. When I'm there, I'm just with the locals. I travel with them, I preach with them, I live with them, I do everything with them. And I've learned so many things there. My God, my whole worldview has been put upside down, actually. I'm coming from this German woman's equality, feminist background. You know, that's what we are taught when we when we grow up in the Western part of the world. But my God, wow, I learned so many things. And yes, and Bangladesh, just for your quick information, it's also a very special place. It's East Bengal. It's where most of Mahaprabhu's eternal associates come from. Rupa, Sanatan Goswami, Mukunda Datta, even Jagannath Mishra, Sachimata, Madhavendra Puri's original Bhajan Kutia is there. You can't even go there by car. You have to go on the back of a motorbike through the rice fields. I mean, it's really an amazing place. Paradise for brahmacharis, really. We have hundreds of brahmacharis there because the culture is so strong that it's so much easier there to be brahmachari. Yes. And yeah, so, and interestingly enough, because it is a Muslim country, that actually preserves our Vaishnav culture there. Sounds maybe paradox, but it is indeed like that. Muslims are not so fond of all the, you know, modern Kali Yuga ideas. So that has kept our Vaishnav culture so intact. It's amazing. I mean, when I'm there, I feel like I'm entering Chaitanya Charitamrita. The whole bhajan, kirtan, prasadam culture, culture of respect, it is all still going on, full on. So much so that when our brahmacharis go to India to take their congregational members on some South Indian tour or something, When I ask them, so how was your trip to India? They say, yeah, it was all right, but I wouldn't want to live there. Too Western mentality. That's their answer. Yes. So when I come from Bangladesh to Mayapur, I feel like I'm coming to the West. You know? Yes, it's really like that. So in any case, it's the best place to actually experience how this Vaishnav life is meant to be lived. And yes, let me advertise at this moment my little book I put together. This is the essence of what I've learned in Bangladesh. Not everything, but part one. Yes. And it's called Spiritual Culture, Krishna's Divine System. I like to see our Vaishnav culture like Krishna's system he gives us in order to create stability and harmony in this world so that we can wholeheartedly develop our relationship with him. And all our social problems we are facing, I see them as global reactions for not following Krishna's system. Because this is the modern mentality. We think Krishna's system is old-fashioned. It's outdated. Our modern system is so much better than Krishna's system. Even within Krishna consciousness, we sometimes come across this. And it's very clear because, you know, spiritual culture, materialistic culture, they are like day and night. Krishna says it in 269. You know, they're so opposite. Material life is all about showing off and feeding the ego and sense gratification and. Spiritual culture is the opposite. I mean, it can't be more opposite than that. So naturally, we all like material life and taste. We attach to it. So therefore, sometimes when we read this book, we will discover that we are miles away from Krishna's system and boo, the mind is objecting, you know. Yeah, so I highly recommend after this class, we will have a little book table out there. And all the profit of the book distribution, I would like to donate to your construction project there. So I will only keep £3 per book just to cover the basic printing and shipping because I send 100 books here. And all the rest is for you, for your project. So you can't lose by getting one. Okay, so let us start with the Bhagavatam. That was enough introduction. So hang on, where are we? Yes, we are 1624, right? Yes. I'm in the wrong chapter here. Yes, this sounds better. Translation. Intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time, even at the time of creation as well as the time of annihilation. Your remembrance will continue by my mercy. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devotional service rendered to the personality of Godhead never goes in vain. Since the personality of Godhead is eternal, intelligence applied in his service or anything done in his relation is also permanent. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said that such transcendental service rendered unto the personality of Godhead accumulates birth after birth, and when the devotee is fully matured, the total service counted together makes him eligible to enter into the association of the personality of Godhead. Such accumulation of God's service is never vanquished, but increases till fully matured. Very nice topic. The chapter is called Conversation Between Narada and Vyasadeva. So here we have Narada Muni telling about his previous life, how he attained his original form of Narada Muni again. And actually, previous to this life, he was a Gandharva called Upavarana, and he was very attractive and had a very beautiful voice. That's already a dangerous combination, being attractive and having a beautiful voice. So Upavarana, he came to a, we could call it a Kirtan Mela in the upper planets somewhere. He attended some assembly of saints and sages glorifying the Lord. And he committed that offense of bringing attention to himself rather than glorifying the Lord. And that's an offense. So, and as a result of that, he was cursed to take birth in one lifetime without opulence. The curse was, so you don't know how to deal with opulence. You're showing off and trying to impress the heavenly damsels there. So therefore, one life without opulence. And that's how he had that lifetime as a son of a maidservant, not very opulent. But of course, even in that lifetime, he did remember things, and he was very attracted to the sadhus who took shelter of his mother there, and. So in any case, good warning to us what can happen if we enter kirtan with the wrong consciousness, or if we lead kirtan in the wrong consciousness, showing off and trying to bring attention to ourselves rather than Krishna. And yes, so we can say, actually, this fact that whatever little progress we are doing is not lost, but we are allowed to keep that and we continue in next life, this is really Krishna's mercy. I mean, without that, I don't think we would have much hope, you know, if we would have to always start from the beginning again. And I'm becoming more and more convinced that actually for most of us, it is a journey over several lifetimes. Not so easy to go back to Godhead. And I mean, Prabhupada in the purport, he mentions two times, even though the purport is so short, but he mentions two times fully matured. So one has to be fully matured. So let's see how far I go with the time. We can maybe at the end have a little look what that means, fully matured. So not so easy. And I mean, here we have the story also with Raghava Das, who became Ratnavali, who is, I believe, in your community somewhere, right? Ratnavali Maharaji, yes. I always like to use that example on Sunday feast programs, you know, to newcomers. It's a mind blow for people often, you know, to actually have some practical example. And when I heard this story first time 10 or 15 years ago, it also left a deep impression on me that I realized, wow, it's really happening like this. It's not just something that's written in Bhagavad Gita or something, but that's how it goes, you know. And even though Raghava was a brahmacharya and he was a Prabhupada disciple and a book distributor, well, it was not enough to go back, you know. He was not fully matured, you know. So it's good warning. So, yes, not so easy. And it's, yeah, we can understand, we can compare it like having a spiritual bank account there. On whatever bite of prasadam we make, whatever Hare Krishna we chant, whatever little service we perform, it's an eternal investment, some eternal plus there in the bank account. I mean, that's very wonderful. You know, whatever little impressions we have and tiny little advancement we make is of eternal benefit, and we continue in our next life. And in the purport, Prabhupada is saying, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that transcendental service rendered accumulates. So I guess he refers to the sixth chapter, 41 to 45 or something. There, Krishna explains. So the unsuccessful yogi, right? He takes birth either in an aristocratic family, or he takes birth in a family of transcendentalists, meaning devotees. And then from then on, he has a better chance. So basically, we leave off, we take off where we left off before type thing, you know, we continue where we left previous lifetime. And I've seen it with devotees that, you know, when a person comes newly to Krishna consciousness, yeah, there's a ignorance, but then it takes only a little bit of transcendental knowledge, and boom, he's up there, you know, and he continues from a higher level. Yeah? You might have observed this too. So it might only take a little bit of awakening, and then immediately we are established where we left off last life, and we continue from there. So we see this also amongst devotees, that everybody really starts off on a different level, right? Because, yeah, who knows what contact we have had previous lifetime. And of course, you know, in regards to remembrance by Krishna's mercy, the verse 15:15 from Bhagavad Gita comes to mind, Savasya cha muri sanivisto, matasmita jnanam upunam cha. So, Krishna is in everyone's heart, and from him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So also knowledge, also forgetfulness, not only remembrance, right? And, yeah, it's like that knowledge, realization, is revealed from within the heart by Krishna. We don't get realizations just by studying. We can be very learned, we can know so many verses, so many things, but we might have very little realization. So actually our studies is meant to bring us, it's meant to give us some bandhagyan and get us on deeper levels of chanting, and get us to surrender in service. And then proportionally to our service attitude, Krishna reveals. That's how it works. Yeah? That's why, satatam kirtayantum mam yatanta shadvita vrata, this yatanta shadvita vrata, is such an important principle. Endeavoring with great determination. That's what illustrates what service attitude a devotee should have. And if we endeavor with great determination, that's what attracts Krishna, and he reveals, he shows himself to such a person. So, and that's true knowledge, realization. Not jnan, but vijnan. So it is definitely coming from the Lord. And forgetfulness also, I mean, Krishna is so kind, you know, thank God we forget our previous life. My God, this would be so burdening if we would remember previous lifetimes. So like this, we only have one set of upadis to deal with. You know, one set of false designations. I'm a woman, I'm German, I'm this, I'm that. So let us just imagine if we would remember all previous lifetimes, we would be completely confused. So even that kind of forgetfulness, it is actually Krishna's mercy that we don't remember. And yes, also if a living entity wants to forget Krishna, then Krishna allows. He sanctions. So in that way also forgetfulness actually comes ultimately from the Lord. And remembrance, that's the topic of the verse. Also, we can observe that sometimes even material knowledge Krishna allows to remember, not only spiritual knowledge, you know. Sometimes we see that small children, they're like a genius in something, playing the piano or some scientific knowledge, and people think, my God, the kid is only 8 or 10. How is it possible? So obviously, it is something from previous lifetime. Or even amongst us devotees, we sometimes see, you know, a person might very easily learn Madanga. Like in Ukraine, and in one family, there's one boy, he played the Madanga when he was 6, 7, 8. When he was 10, he was our best Madanga player in that one yatra. And he never even was learning so much. So, yeah, he never had any lessons or anything. He just picked it up like that. So obviously, this goes back to previous lifetime. Right? So even some abilities, sometimes Krishna allows to remember. But definitely the spiritual progress we are allowed to keep. And we have nice examples of that in the Shastra, like Bharat Maharaj, when he was a deer, he did have some remembrance of his life as Bharat Maharaj. I want to read you one little paragraph here of the purport from my little verse book. This is 5th canto, 8th chapter, verse 30. Prabhupada explains, although Bharat Maharaj received the body of a deer, by constant repentance, he became completely detached from all material things. So even in the body of a deer, he repented. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So obviously, Krishna allowed him to keep, you know, so all his progress he had made as Bharat Maharaj. And then it continues, he did not disclose these things to anyone as a deer. He did not disclose. One might wonder, well, how is a deer disclosing anything? But obviously a deer can. But he left his mother deer in a place known as Kalandra Mountain, where he was born. He again went to the forest of Chalagram and to the ashram of Pulastya in Pulaha. So because of this remembrance, he left his mother deer, something which usually deers don't do, and he goes to an ashram there to get some association, and he's repenting, all in the body of a deer. Right? So that nice example, you know, of this remembrance which Krishna allows. Or another one is Gajendra. Right? He remembered the prayers he learned as Indrajumna. I assume this is King Indrajumna, or is it a different Indrajumna? Anybody knows here? It only says Indrajumna. Sorry? Different Indrajumna. Yeah, it has to be, right? Yes, yes. But in any case, some Indrajumna. And he remembered the prayers in the body of an elephant, Gajendra. So, another good example. You know, how even in an animal's body, Krishna allows this remembrance. And I once also came across a nice story from the modern days. In Ukraine, there is one Madhaji. Her name is Surabhi Devi Dasi. She's been around for 20, 25 years. And she once had a stroke. And she lost all remembrance, all memory. She didn't even know her name. She didn't know where she was. Everything was completely wiped out. And she couldn't speak. You know, this is when you have a stroke and it's on the left side of the brain, then usually right side you're paralyzed. And that always goes together with loss of memory and loss of speech. I used to work as a physiotherapist, so I remember these things. So it was all blank. She couldn't say a single word. She didn't remember where she was, who she was, what her name was, anything. Everything was gone. So and then gradually she recovered, And I asked her when she was healthy again and she couldn't speak and all that. So I asked her, so what was it like? You know, when everything was blank, how was it? So, and she gave an interesting answer. She said, actually, I didn't know anything. I couldn't remember my name, nothing. There was only one thing I could remember, and that was the Maha Mantra. And all I did was just chant the Maha Mantra, and that made me so peaceful, and I knew I would be all right. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? Yes, how Krishna allows to remember. She didn't know her name, but she remembered the Maha Mantra. I mean, obviously, this is Krishna there giving that remembrance. You know? And another story also, there is a one Prabhupada disciple called Isha, Mother Isha. She left her body a few years ago. She was in Boston when Niranjana Swami joined there as a new bhakta. And he was once saying to me, Mother Isha is my mother in Krishna consciousness. So in any case, Mother Isha also had a stroke. Same thing. Everything was gone from her memory, but she didn't remember. She didn't recover. And she had to go to some non-devotee nursing home because unfortunately, we are not there yet to really take care of our senior devotees in a nicer way than sending them to a non-devotee nursing home. So, and then Niranjana Swami was telling, he was once visiting her in this nursing home because he felt so indebted to her, how she cared for him when he was a new bhakta. And, well, Mother Isha, all she was doing was singing the Maha Mantra throughout the whole nursing home. She also didn't remember anything. And everybody in the nursing home just knew her as, oh yeah, the lady who sings the Hare Krishna song. Yeah, yeah, she is in room number so-and-so. And Niranjana Swami was trying to talk to her and she didn't even recognize him. And he was a little disappointed because he had gone through quite some endeavor and traveled for a few hours to visit her. And then she didn't even recognize him. But then he wrote an article about this and posted it on Dandavats a few years ago. And then, but then he said in this article he shared, well, I realized, well, she remembered the main thing, the Maha Mantra. Never mind whether she remembers me or not. That doesn't matter. At least she remembered the Maha Mantra and she was just singing the Maha Mantra all day. So, well, you know, that's perfection, you know. So, in that way, sometimes this forgetfulness can also be Krishna's mercy because he takes all nonsense impressions away and we forget anything which is not important, but he allows us to remember the main and foremost thing, the Maha Mantra. Right? So then that way there is quite a few nice stories from the Shastra and from modern life which clearly illustrate that, yes, it's a fact. Krishna allows us to remember. So now just a few thoughts about this fully matured. Yes, that it is not so easy to really go back to Godhead. Basically, our subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego, that carries the soul from one gross body to another gross body. So that subtle body actually has to be completely transformed and spiritualized. The mind has to be completely spiritualized. All the material impressions and attachments and all have to be deleted. They all have to be replaced with spiritual impressions and spiritual attachments and desires and longings and all that. Even the aversions have to be transformed too, because attachment and aversion is the two sides of the same coin. So if we are averse to something, it actually also is a material aspect there occupying the mind. It's also based on a certain attachment. So even all aversions have to be neutralized and given up. So, I mean, that's quite a bit of work we have to do, you know? That there might be so many things which we are averse to, even personalities we are averse to. Well, that all has to be worked through, actually, and given up. As we know, Vaishnav quality, to be equal to all, you know, and. So, yeah, to get there, not so easy. And that's only the mind. Then intelligence also means we, whatever intelligence we have, whatever knowledge we have to be able to connect it with Krishna behind it. That's what it means to transform the intelligence and spiritualize it, that we see behind anything and everything Krishna as the supreme proprietor, enjoyer, controller. Right? So also not so easy. Yeah. And Ford's ego. Well, I've got a whole separate seminar on the Ford's ego. The Ford's ego, our constant companion and troublemaker. Has helped me a lot to discover how my ego is always affecting me and making me say things and do things which I shouldn't say and do and all that. Ford's ego is so subtle. Oh my God, we can almost completely miss it, you know? And one can very easily do the opposite in so-called Krishna consciousness, what we should be doing instead of dissolving and subduing the false ego, we feed it and we blow it up and we massage it a little bit and. You know, I mean, one can miss the whole target of Krishna consciousness if we don't learn to see things a bit more deeply. Yeah? Yes. So not so easy to make it back to Godhead. And I guess death is really the final test where we are tested. What is most dear to us? Which relationship is most dear to us? Is Krishna, is that relationship the most important relationship to us? Or are there other relationships which are more important? And if there's other relationships which are more important to us, well, too bad. We have to do another round. We have to work through it and so on. So not so easy. And I guess that's why Krishna says in 8:5, so whoever, you have to remember me alone at the time of death. It's me alone, not me and husband, wife, child, grandchild, whatever. But me alone. Not so easy. So that, you know, requires full maturity, as Prabhupada says it so nicely, you know. That relationship has to become the most important one. So process of bhakti, it is all based on relationship. Pure love requires relationship. So we are tested in that at the moment of death. Which relationship is most important to us? Okay, 2 minutes for questions. Sorry, didn't leave very much time.